Oklahoma, what it is to be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Bidden and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, people who went to either of the Thunder's first two playoff games and their voice is hoarse like mine because they were screaming and barking incessantly, or could hear or watch the games on TV and screamed. You can scream in your own home. You don't have to be at the game to do it. This is the podcast for you. This is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill, a podcast fueled by OU Insider and the Rivals Network. And Brian, we're recording this Thursday morning. I haven't talked much today, but I went to the game last night. And as I'm doing this intro, I'm realizing my voice is messed up, man. This is brutal.
Yeah.
I apologize.
No, you are you're good, man. I'm proud of you. And just getting out there and let it all hang loose for the Thunder, dude. Yeah. Awesome, awesome game incredible. They're just so much fun to watch. Like, that's coming from somebody that isn't a huge NBA fan, but like, I follow the Thunder very closely this year just because it's almost impossible to live in the state and not. You can't take your eyes off of them. I mean, just so much fun. And with everything that's happened in the last year, just about keeping the team in Oklahoma City and all of that stuff, for the fan base to show up the way that they have in the first two games, just absolutely incredible. Like, it just locks in that the right choice was made.
It's been, honestly, getting to go to these first two games, it's been even better than I expected. The turnout, truly, it feels so unique and special. And I think it really feels like a lovable college team. Like, that's right. The environment that this is. Yeah. Like, it doesn't feel like a pro team. Like, sometimes there's kind of that disconnect. Like, it feels like the emotion just isn't quite there like it is for a college team. That's not the case in these playoff games, man. So it's hype, dude.
I have had this conversation with somebody before, and I truly believe to my very core that this is why Oklahoma and Oklahoma State fans are both so passionate. Like, there's not a football team in the state of Oklahoma professionally. So, like, you have these two super passionate fan bases, but they can actually, they get along for the Thunder. They're all Thunder fans. And that passion that people see going at each other in Bedlam, and it, like, for that to be combined and everybody to be all going after the same team, like, it really truly is super special. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
No, it is. And for this team to be so young and already this good, I think we're spoiled, not only because of the Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook teams, not only because of that, but because of how good this team already is. Like, I don't think most people realize just how special these first 15 years in Oklahoma City have been and how rare it is for this team to be this young and this good. Like, this just doesn't happen. I mean, it really doesn't. Actually, the only ever time it's really ever happened like this was with the Thunder 10 years ago.
Exactly.
The other thing I'll mention is I've loved the post game interview stuff they do, where they all kind of crash each other's interviews and they all bark and stuff. I love that, but I didn't know how I was going to feel about barking in the arena during games. But like, when everybody does it, it's actually super cool.
Right. Yeah. Athens, Georgia is like that kind of gives you an idea what it might sound like there.
Yeah. Honestly, that's a really good comparison.
Yeah.
But I could talk forever about the Thunder. I'm even repping the Thunder today. I know we both could, but we got some OU football and softball stuff to talk about, including one piece of info that dropped just before we were set to record, and we had to delay it for a few minutes to cover that and record it. You wrote the story, and that's Josiah Wagner deciding to enter the portal, second-year cornerback who was a really highly touted recruit in last year's recruiting class and got mm-hmm. some time on the field last year, some spot minutes, especially as injuries kind of mounted in that secondary last year. But Brian, we knew that some guys were going to have to enter the portal just numbers wise. OU was above 90 scholarships, I believe, and they have to trim that down to 85. And with the portal window being open for like another week, OU's going to have to lose some guys. I don't think Josiah Wagner would have necessarily been at the top of that list of guys that you'd hope to lose, but it looks like he's going to enter the portal and probably find somewhere else. So Brian, just, you wrote the story, your reaction to Josiah Wagner hitting the portal and what it means for this secondary.
So it was obviously, he was a guy that there was a lot of buzz about last year coming out of spring. I mean, really even in summer camp as well, just how competitive the guy was. Like you're seeing a lot of that, reiterated in other names this year, just lots of competitive depth in the secondary. But Wagner was one of those first guys that stepped on as a freshman, stepped on the field and like really seemed to win the coaches over. You say this about a couple of guys, but I think Josiah Wagner might be like the epitome of somebody that plays with a dog mentality. Like he's 5'11", but he's listed at 178 pounds. That's probably on the heavy side. He's not a very big guy, but he played like it and he practiced that way. And I think that wherever he ends up, whoever ends up picking him up is going to get a guy that I think can contribute right away. It's just it's a matter of this is truly a roster casualty of competitive depth, because the defensive secondary or the defensive backfield, the secondary as a whole right now is as deep as it has been in Norman in fill in the year. It's been so long since Oklahoma's had the number of guys that are ready to contribute right away as they do right now. So I think it hurts. Obviously you don't ever want to lose somebody that's promising and young and has a lot of football ahead of them. That always kind of hurts, but this is honestly just, it's a product of the environment that college football is going through right now. You just have, there's not any more waiting until your turn and playing as a junior or senior. Like those days are long gone. Guys can find opportunities elsewhere right now. And I think Wagner will. He's going to be a good player. I think he played in seven games for OU last year. Each of their last five regular season games he played. So he missed the first half of the season with injuries for the most part. But I mean, he had some good things on tape, and I think that there's enough there that he'll catch on pretty quickly.
He played 76 snaps last year per Pro Football Focus. So not a lot, but when you put it into context of, yeah, he missed first few games of the season, he got like real backup reps, you know, a few here, a few there. And I do think this is almost, it's kind of like, it's not the same thing, but it's kind of like the NBA, there's more salary cap rules coming that's going to make it harder to keep on to young talent, and you almost get punished for having so much young talent. I think that's kind of what's happening in college football, not only with the transfer portal rules, but also the scholarship limits. You would hope it's going to be, if you lose casualties, like you mentioned, you're hoping it's guys that there's not really a pathway to playing time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Josiah Wagner was going to play a ton this year, because you look at the depth in that room, and obviously it's Woody Washington and Gentry Williams and Des Malone and Makari Vickers and Jacoby Johnson. Like there's guys in that room.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he was going to immediately play, and that's probably part of why he entered the portal. But was it possible he was going to have a role? Absolutely. Was it possible in 2 years he was going to have a really big role? Yeah. And so it hurts to lose these guys, and it's almost like you run, like, the more talented guys you get, you just run the risk of losing guys and losing a second year guy on top of that. I don't know what you're supposed to do, though, because you want to play the guys that give you the best chance to win. Sometimes that means not playing these younger guys, but you also want to have younger guys to set you up for the future. I don't know what you're supposed to do. And it's through no fault of his own or anybody else's. It's a tough spot.
It's really tough with what the NCAA has done rules wise, because if you remember, before we saw Deion Sanders do what he did at Colorado last year, there was limitations on how many scholarship players you could add in a given cycle, so that you could keep schools from totally, you know, cutting everybody on their roster and starting over. And, you know, you saw for a long time that hurt teams. Like, Kansas is notoriously one of those teams that they would lose so much in a given cycle that they could not keep up scholarship wise. They would have less scholarship players than everybody else in the country. And so this new rule, with that being, you know, eliminated for right now, it's made it to where those guys can leave. They can go somewhere else. And now you can transfer multiple times. And it does make it really hard to have any kind of solidarity as, you know, as a roster. There is no, you can't really count on anybody really truly being there from year to year. So, yeah, it's tough. And that's just kind of one of the, this is a small loss in the grand scheme of Oklahoma's roster right now. I mean, not to take away anything that Wagner has done for the team, but there are much bigger pieces being moved out there, like Jaden Rashada going from Arizona State to Georgia, like big names like that. It's going to, I don't know at what point do you stop and realize that you've changed. This is a whole can of worms that I'm about to open up, but you've changed the structure of college football so much with guys like this leaving. The fabric of the sport's totally different. Like, the best example to use is this versus a guy like Justin Harrington. Like, a Justin Harrington in the past totally would understand why that guy would leave. He's had bad injury luck here, just needs a refresh. He's got one more year left. Like, makes total sense for him to go and try and figure something out. Josiah Wagner's situation, he's been on campus for a year, developed for a couple of years, and now, you know, at least for my two cents, that's 2 years, two off seasons spent developing a guy that is now going to take that development somewhere else. And so you're seeing that everywhere. Like, what are your thoughts on that? I feel like there's just so much there to be opened up.
I think the tough part is, I mean, every team in any sport, in any league, wants to be good immediately. Absolutely. But when you look at some leagues like the NBA or the NFL, particularly professional leagues, there sometimes is an incentive to be bad or to really develop young talent at the risk of being immediately competitive, because you can get draft picks and you can also prepare for the future that way by developing the young talent, hoping they grow and become valuable guys later. You can't really do that in college football. You kind of have to be, there's not really rebuilding. And with the transfer portal, the way it is now, it's almost made that less of a possibility and put more pressure on teams to be really good every year, because you can get immediate reinforcements and likely veteran guys that have time on the field that can come make you better right away. Yeah. And if you're Oklahoma, you're heading into the SEC, Last year was good. Finished 10-3, finished the regular season 10-2. That's a good year. It's not an amazing year. It's a good year. And you're facing pressure to see the jump from year one to year two to year three under Brent Venables, and you're jumping to the SEC, so you don't want to get left behind, it gives less incentive to play young guys who aren't immediately ready. It puts more pressure to have to, even if it's not a for sure thing, to go into the portal and see if you can land experienced veteran guys who can play right away, because that gives your team the best chance of success. Unfortunately, the casualty of that is going to be young guys like Josiah Wagner. And I'm looking at, I don't want to speculate too much, but I'm looking at, there's other guys on the roster that if you look up and down it, you're wondering, is there going to be someone like Jaron Kanick? Is it going to be someone like Javonte Barnes? I don't want to speculate. I'm not reporting anything.
Sure.
But I think, so I'm not saying anything groundbreaking. What I am saying is I do think it is, the only way you can get experience is by spending time on the field. That's the only way you can get experience. But if you can get guys who are experienced, that's almost a trade-off you have to make in getting those guys at the expense of developing younger players. So then it almost makes the focus like, how can you get young guys who are ready to play right away because you have less time for projects? But like, how many freshmen and second year players are really ready for big time snaps at a power five or a power four school?
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is, but I do think there is that. I mean, I feel for these young guys because this didn't used to be like this.
Right.
You would get developed year one and year two, and hopefully by year three or sometimes year four, that's when you make an impact. But now I think there's pressure not only to get young guys that are ready to play right away, but I think there's now pressure for young guys that if they're not playing right away to find somewhere else that'll play them.
Yep.
I don't know what the answer is though.
It's tough because this has changed the sport in the grandest of schemes, because if you think about it, it's changed not only the way that recruiting at the high school level is being done. It's just not as, you're having guys lose scholarship opportunities out of high school because those scholarships are going to transfer players, at other programs that are already developed at a certain point. You also just, you throw in what you just said with Josiah Wagner about, just that situation with the younger guys, but then you've heard NFL GMs too say guys that have come out of these post transfer portal and post NIL classes, they're not as good of football players. Their work ethic is not there. It's not the same level of, the talent hasn't necessarily changed, but as far as the commitment to sticking through the hard stuff, like it, just in a grand scheme, everything's changed. And until there is some sort of rule change or set, I think this is just going to continue. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. So enough of that soapbox on my end.
I think in a weird way, you kind of get punished for having a bunch of depth.
Yeah.
I think you can get punished for having a bunch of depth. And that OU secondary has a lot of guys. That cornerback room has a lot of guys. And that's that weird conundrum of like, you want as many talented, good players on your roster as you can possibly get at every position group. Mm-hmm. However, with the transfer portal, now it's made it hard to even build that, because I guarantee you this coaching staff saw Josiah Wagner, at least initially, as a guy who could have an impact for them
early on.
Early on and over his time at OU.
Yeah.
So I think that makes it hard. And also, one thing that I've wondered is, there's always been a little bit of politics when it comes to how much do you have to worry about keeping everybody on your roster happy?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very common problem that exists at all levels of sports, from T-ball all the way to the major leagues.
Right.
That's always been a thing. And some coaches really worry about it more than others, but like, do you have to keep it in the back of your mind now? Not only just that the transfer portal exists, but like, man, this is a guy that could really help us in 2 or 3 years. I don't know if he's ready right now, but if we don't play him, I don't, you know what I mean?
To be completely honest, yeah. I mean, I think you're going to see guys that aren't developed, like, it sounds so... It sounds so weird. Like, and I'm going to use this as an example, and I hope I don't get crucified for this, but it, like, a guy like David Stone, who clearly has all of the talent in the world, is going to be a potential day one, day two draft pick at some point for the Sooners in the future, and is a former five-star guy. Like, absolutely has all the tools necessary. Is he developed enough to make the impact that a lot of people expect going into the year? Probably not. As a fan base, I would think that there are, the general consensus would be he's going to be like an all SEC style guy. And I don't expect that from him. I do expect him to be a difference maker for Oklahoma. I do. But I think in situations like that around the country, you're going to have guys that aren't quite developed enough yet playing more than they probably should be, so that you don't have exits in the transfer portal. Like, I think that's going to happen all over the place. So, it's interesting. Like, that's why culture, building a culture, like with what Oklahoma has done under Brent Venables to this point, having a legitimate culture is probably more important right now than it's ever been to keep people on your roster. And it's probably also the hardest time ever to build a culture because you have so many moving parts. So yeah, I would not want to be a college football coach right now. No thanks.
Here's the thing too. I think we both, I mean, best of luck to Josiah Wagner. I think we both think he's going to have a productive career elsewhere. Yep. Here's the reality. Oklahoma's already made a couple of portal additions in Branson Hickman and Jermaine Lowell.
Yep.
They're probably going to make more. And you add on top of that, that OU still needs to get their scholarship numbers down. There's going to be other guys hit the portal.
Yep.
And it's going to happen in the next couple of days. Josiah Wagner's not the only one. I probably shouldn't have mentioned the names I had in mind earlier. But I definitely have a few guys in mind that I think probably will, or should at least take a look at it, because Oklahoma needs guys to hit the portal.
Right.
So buckle in, because I think when we reconvene next week for the next episode, we're going to have a lot of guys that we're talking about. But I will say, but what we can do is, I think we have a good sense of who could hit the portal, but I think we also have a good sense of who's going to be on this team next year. And I know you and Parker are going to talk about Branson Hickman and Jermaine Lowell in a separate YouTube video that I'll upload later. Everyone should go check that out, because those are two really big additions, especially Hickman, adding depth to that offensive line. But I wanted to ask you before we get into some softball talk, because we didn't talk about softball last week and we need to talk about some softball. Just give me, you know, we were both at the spring game. We actually haven't talked since the spring game. Give me just a couple of the guys that stood out to you on either side of the ball. Could be anybody. A couple guys that stood out to you and from the spring game, and how much stock you put into the way their springs went and the way they played and what it means for the fall.
Well, I'd be blind if I didn't say Deion Burks first. Like, I mean, what else do you have to say about the guy? He's going to be a problem. I think he's going to be very, very productive for Oklahoma if he can stay healthy. That's a guy that I still don't understand how he wasn't talked about more before he ended up at OU. I don't know. Like, Purdue's not a bad football program by any means, but we're talking about a guy that could legitimately be one of the more explosive athletes OU's had at wide receiver in a long time. So he's going to be very good for Oklahoma. Another guy, which, you know, this was something that I was really excited about because we saw some flashes in spring. There was some skepticism from some people that I talked to, but it ended up really showing through in the spring game was Caleb Hicks. Like, there was a lot of really good things that I saw from him, particularly on his long touchdown run. The jump cut, the vision, the patience, like all of it just kind of summed up in one play. It looked very good. Like that was something that Oklahoma lacked outside of Gavin Sawchuk last year, that home run ability, that could be huge, for OU going forward. So, Hicks was another one. The offensive line as a whole, honestly, really impressed me. Like the first group, Michael Tarquin looked okay. Looked decent at tackle. I don't think he's going to be your starting. I still think Jacob Sexton's your starting left tackle. He looked good at guard, but he's your tackle. And I think when Garrett Hatchett gets up to speed, I think that's going to end up being your guard. But I liked what I saw from the offensive line. I thought Josh Bates did a good job. You know, all of this stuff was super vanilla, so it's not like you're not going to really draw a lot from it. But from what we did saw, that was good. Did see that was good. Jaden Jackson's going to be so good. Like, I don't know what his ceiling is in year one.
He's going to play right now,
but yeah, he's playing with the ones. Like, he is so far and away ahead of the curve for a freshman. He just looks so good, and he's good technically. Like that is what's so surprising, is how refined he is technically. So I was impressed with him. Obviously Grayson Holton had a huge day. He looked very, very good. Jacoby Johnson looked good out there. You know, there's Michael Boganowski looked good. There were several guys that kind of flashed. And I liked what I saw to Kobe McKenzie too. I know that he's behind Danny Stutzman, which, you know, that's going to be hard for him to find a huge role as long as Stutzman's healthy. But the development there at linebacker is just like very impressive. Like it's, you don't have to look very far to realize Brent Venables kind of knows what he's doing when it comes to linebackers. And those guys have really stepped it up in the time since he's been there. So several pieces that I was really excited about, but all those guys. And then I'll kind of like segue this to you, because I'm not going to try and say his last name, but 34 was good. Like 34 had some, he had some really good showings, had some good reps. And there were a couple times where I think they credited a quarterback with a throwaway or with, you know, they didn't give PJ a sack, and it would have been, absolutely would have been, had it been a live game. So, thought that was exciting too.
PJ Eddie Bauer, thinking of a defensive line with PJ, Jaden, David Stone, and R. Mason Thomas, that's exciting to think about. And really, I agreed with you about the offensive line, at least that first group. And that's what it makes me excited about, or curious about, what Branson Hickman is going to do in that room. I feel pretty good about that defensive line. I really do. Now, it's not amazing. And Brent called their lack of experience on the interior concerning, which is, I think, part of why they added Jermaine Lowell.
Yeah.
But I think Grayson Holton, Dejon Terry, Jaden Jackson, and David Stone are all going to be able to play. And everybody keeps talking about, or Ashton Sanders continues to be mentioned.
Devon Sears too.
Yeah. Devon Sears. I don't think it's like the most amazing interior defensive line group OU's ever had, but I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be good. I don't think it's as much of a question as people think it's going to be.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a lot of those names. I will say, I feel really good about the linebacker depth. Really, really good. And I think that secondary, man, if they can stay healthy,
it'd be so good.
It's going to be really, really, really good. And we didn't even, I mean, Reggie Powers, I think, is a guy that might see playing time right away as a freshman. Yeah. Boganowski, he did not get the memo that it's a spring game, because he was looking to knock everybody's heads off.
Yeah, he was. Love that.
Yeah. Robert Spears Jennings is going to have a huge role on this team. Huge role. I think it's finally come together for him. Mm-hmm. Peyton Bowen. I mean, there's just.
And that's without seeing Woody Washington, Billy Bowman, Gentry Williams. Like, yeah. I mean, your best, arguably some of your best players sitting out. So
Yeah.
Gonna be a good group.
As far as the quarterback room, did you see anything that particularly stood out to you?
So I thought Jackson Arnold did a good job taking care of the football. Obviously, I mean, he didn't really put the ball in harm's way. To me, it seemed like he had a lot more control of like what was going on. Like it seemed like he was a lot more comfortable this time around. Of course, it's a spring game, so you can't really take too much from it. But I thought he really felt like he was in more control of what was going on. You know, obviously, it makes it a lot easier whenever you've got Deion Burks running wide open with nobody around him. But that was good. But you know, from Mike Hawkins, he was running for his life the entire time, but he just looked so good doing that. Like, I know that sounds funny probably, but that's a guy that has no experience at the college level. But he totally fit in athletically. Like he I would even say he stood out athletically. So, really excited. That's one of those guys that you just like hope and pray that Oklahoma can hang on to as long as Jackson Arnold is, you know, the starter. You just hope that Oklahoma can do enough to keep him around because he is going to be special. If he can stay healthy, that's a kid that it's not just what he can do with his legs either. Like he has a very good arm. I would say an extremely underrated arm for the room that he's in. So yeah, really, really, really like what they have there. And I think Casey Thompson being a part of that room is only going to benefit he and Jackson Arnold tremendously, like just having somebody like that with that much experience. So I really like what I saw from those guys.
Any concerns about the kicking game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly. Yeah. I thought Dominic Zavada from Arkansas State would be somebody Oklahoma would just like immediately hit up, and they didn't, which, you know, I think Liam Evans probably has the best ceiling of all those guys. Just watching him kick beforehand, I wasn't real impressed with Keltner's with his power as a kicker. Like, you know, he's not going to be the guy you send out there to make a 55 yarder. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot that I think right now I'm just going to say status quo. Like I think the punting game is going to be really good as it kind of finished out last year, really strong. But as far as, yeah, field goals and things that you need to put points on the board, I'm still holding out that there's another option out there potentially.
No, I've got concerns too. I do. But I don't have concerns about punting at all. And I'm all in on Peyton Bowen as a punt returner.
Oh, they are too, clearly, because he was the only one in the first half that lined up back there to catch a punt. So,
And I know Gavin Freeman didn't play, but I'm hoping that's less about Gavin Freeman not playing and more about they're going full in on Peyton Bowen. I think he is a guy,
what was the kid's name at UCLA that played both ways a couple years ago? Miles. He played both ways, but he was such a good athlete that you couldn't take him off the field. Was it Miles Jack?
Yeah.
Anyways, that's Peyton Bowen. Like you just need to, you need to insert him into the lineup wherever you can, because he's just that kind of athlete. Like he's going to make a difference. So, really like him.
Miles Jack.
There we go. I mean, do you feel better about the team as a whole after having watched the spring game than you did going in? Or do you have more concerns?
I try not to put a ton of stock into the spring. But I would say taking collectively the spring practices that we got to watch and then the spring game, I would say collectively, I feel better. I would zoom that in on specific position groups. I feel better about the top of the offensive line and the interior of the defensive line as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah. not that there still aren't questions, but I would say collectively, I feel more optimistic with some question marks still lingering. What about you?
Yeah. I think OU still needs a tackle. Like they still need to find somebody out there, and I don't know that they're going to find one off on the offensive side of the ball. If they can figure out a way of getting Dominic Williams to like come into Oklahoma, that defensive tackle room goes from being really good to like one of the best in the SEC. And I don't say that lightly. Like that, if they can add a guy of that caliber on top of what they already have, the rotation that you would be putting out there would be as good as you would find outside of maybe like a Georgia. So pretty good. They can figure some things out pretty good. I just like how many young pieces are really showing up for Oklahoma right now. Like the future, you always kind of talk future tense with college football, but it does feel like the future is extremely bright in Norman.
I agree. Let's wrap this up by touching on some softball action. We didn't talk about softball last week. We did not preview that series against Houston, but OU took care of business. They won 23-2 across the three games. They outscored them 23-2. And I think it was a much needed weekend for them after kind of a couple up and down weekends, losing the series against Texas, losing that uncharacteristic game to BYU. And Brian, I don't think last weekend was the best they've ever played. I don't think it's the best they've played this season. But I thought it was solid because I do think this team is battling a lot right now. Just listening to, you know, talking with Patty Gasso and some of the players, I do think they do feel a little bit of a sense of urgency. But I think also trying to balance that with just playing free, you know. But I liked a lot of what I saw, man. Kirsten Deal is killing it in the circle. Kelly Maxwell is solid as always. You know, did you have any major takeaways from that Houston series?
So Houston came into the weekend, I believe, ranked 11th in scoring. And it's a team that's put up like several big spots against good Big 12 competition at this point. They haven't won a lot of games. I think they're 3-18 in Big 12 play. So, you know, a loss would have been just tragic. But I was really happy with two shutouts and holding them to two runs total. I thought that was good. It just feels like this team is not that they lack, I don't think they lack an identity right now, but it does feel like there are more questions about that than we've seen in the past. And I don't know if that's just simply because nobody knows how to handle Oklahoma losing a series. Like for them to lose a series to Texas, I think is just still befuddling for a lot of people. But I don't know. Like to me, Bedlam ending the regular season for Oklahoma this year might mean more. Like it might be the most important end to a regular season that Oklahoma's had in their span of championship runs here recently. I just think that the way that it sets up, they're coming off a road trip to Orlando. UCF is not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. They got swept last week by Baylor and Waco, but before that, I think they had won 11 or 12 games in a row.
The total score of that series last weekend was 4-1.
Right. Yes. So like we're talking about a team that can play small ball, but also can really lock in if they have Sarah Willis as somebody that can absolutely deal. So, you know, I think this is really important. Like this stretch, this next seven games for Oklahoma is going to be really, really important because one, you've got Texas right on your hip for first place. That, I mean, they're just one game back. If you tie, you've lost the tiebreaker to them. So like there is pressure there. It's just going to be a race to the finish. And I'm really interested to see if Oklahoma can find, like, there was that stretch for a few weeks, about a month and a half into the season, where the offense just seemed to catch fire. And typically in past years, that would just continue, and then they kind of hit a bit of a lull. So can they get hot at the right time? And the time for that would be, starting this weekend. They need to have all the confidence they can find in the world going into the Big 12 tournament, because very likely, very, very likely, you're going to meet Texas in the end again. You're going to have to play Texas again, or Oklahoma State. And I just think going into that postseason tournament, going into the NCAA tournament, like, you just need as much confidence as you can get.
You know, you hit everything on the head, man. I asked Patty on Tuesday about, I mean, I asked her about this Big 12 race, and she was like, these next 2 weekends are going to be, she said, they're going to tell us a lot about this team, because not only do they need to round into form for the postseason, but yeah, dude, they're one game up on Texas, they're 2 games up on Oklahoma State, and they still have the Oklahoma State series to go. It is not a guarantee that OU wins the Big 12, and it is not a guarantee that they host through the World Series.
Right.
That's not a guarantee. If they were to slip up and not finish first in the Big 12 or not win the Big 12 tournament, it is not a guarantee. It's likely,
Yeah.
but it's not a guarantee. If
Right.
they lose the Oklahoma State series and don't win the Big 12 tournament, or hell, if they slip up this weekend to a decent UCF team, it's not a guarantee.
Right.
And I do think we have yet to see OU play its best brand of softball. And Patty kind of mentioned that they need to peak right now. This is the time where they need to start peaking for the postseason. And I do think that Oklahoma State series is going to be hectic, but I actually think this series is this against UCF is going to be pretty interesting. Their pitching is really solid. OU's having to travel to Central Florida.
Yeah.
And this is a UCF team that was 10-8 in the Big 12 before that weekend against Baylor. And it was pretty surprising to see their offense only score one run, but all those games were dogfights.
Yes, they were.
And now, I mean, they're 10-11, but they were 10-8 at it was at Baylor. Series was at Baylor. That's a hell of a lot of travel. I'm curious to see how Oklahoma plays, particularly offensively, where I think the offense, look, it's hard to complain about 23 runs across 3 games. I don't think their offense has really hit their stride. Patty has talked for 2 consecutive weekends now that they're getting runners on base. They're not doing a great job of scoring them. I think they left 30 runners stranded last weekend, which is a good and a bad, because that means you're getting runners on base, but you're leaving meat on the bone.
And that's become a trend,
It
unfortunately.
has. It has. And they usually lead the Big 12 in runners stranded because their offense is so prolific.
Right.
But I think it has been, I mean, Patty said, like, that has, she's basically said that's been a little bit of a cause for concern. That's something they're really focusing on. So, look, it's not about, look, OU's 42-4. They're first in the Big 12. They're the favorites. But I do think this weekend is actually a little bit of an under the radar series, not only in the Big 12, but college softball as a whole.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting, and curious to be looking at that offense. And in the circle, we've talked about it, but Nicole Maid, this just hasn't been her best season. I think Kirsten Diehl has been the second best pitcher. And Kirsten's had some really good performances the last 2 weeks. I can't even remember all the num or the last 2 games. I don't remember all the numbers, but they're insane. She's top 5 in the country in ERA for the season. But I still worry a little bit about how much they're going to have to lean on Kelly Maxwell. So can Kirsten Diehl keep this up? And then can Nicole May find a groove? Because this UCF offense is fine, but not great. So I think this circle should be dominant this weekend, I think.
I agree. And the other thing that you kind of, it's to me, it's nuts that we're already at this point in the season, but you kind of start peeking at RPI a little bit now. Like, because you're a couple weeks away from the, from postseason tournament stuff. UCF's currently 36th in RPI. Kansas is 42nd. You've got, I think, five or six teams there that are like right in the mix, which is nuts for the Big 12. That there's that many teams. You know, it's not the SEC where you've got just peppered the top 25 with all of your teams. But the Big 12 has been pretty good. And I think that, you know, this is another one of those opportunities where you're playing postseason capable competition this weekend, and you need to show that you can handle the pressure a little bit on the road. This isn't the first time they've been on the road since Texas, or is it? This is the first time that they've been on the road since losing to Texas. So I don't know that Oklahoma's going to see the kind of hostility that they did in Austin the rest of the way, unless for some reason they just don't host all the way through. But you know, this is a building block moment for this team, and it's got to be something that they go out there and really show that they've taken some steps since they dropped that series. So it's going to be big.
Series starts Friday at 5 p.m. Central, I believe. And I think Saturday is, I think it's at 1 p.m. Central. And then Sunday is at 10 a.m.
Yep.
Is that right? Because they're in Florida. They're in Florida time. All those games on ESPN Plus. I expect Oklahoma to sweep just like normal, but
Sunday's game got moved to ESPNU, by the way.
Oh, that's right. ESPNU. Thank you for mentioning that.
You're good.
I expect Oklahoma to win like I normally do, but, and it's not the end of the world if they drop a game, but I do think they'll get a challenge. I think there will be at least one game where their offense,
they've
got to find a way to get things going, because UCF is throwing pretty well. I do think
I'd be surprised if there's not like a 4-1 game, like, you know, something like that in here. So,
yeah, where it's maybe it's Nick and Tuck and OU gets a couple of big hits towards the end of the game, kind of win it.
100%.
We'll see. But Brian, I think that is going to do it for us here on another episode of the Oklahoma Drill. Our transfer portal window is in full swing. All kinds of stuff still to come over the next few days that is sure to be chaotic. Basketball portal, that's a whole other discussion. That's just a whole other thing. Our man Brody Lusk has been handling that. He's been killing it on the basketball portal beat. You're going to get all the latest up-to-date news over at OUinsider.com. Make sure to hit over there, become a VIP member just for $9.95 a month. You're going to get so much for just a few dollars every single month. Make sure to head over there. And you should also make sure to like and subscribe here at this OU Insider YouTube channel. We'll have content every single day breaking down all things OU athletics, OU football, basketball, and softball. Tons of stuff you're going to not want to miss. And next week's episode, we'll have, I'm sure, tons of transfer portal chaos to talk about. We'll have Bedlam softball to preview and what might be the most anticipated series of the season in college softball. So not going to want to miss any of that. Make sure to like and subscribe. Make sure to head over to OUinsider.com. And until then, we'll see you guys next time on the Oklahoma Drill.